You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Well, hello and welcome to Literary Treks, Trek FM's dedicated Star Trek books and comics show. I am one of your hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me today, once again, is BookTube extraordinaire Jonathan Cohn. Jonathan, how are you today?
I'm good. We're delving into uncharted territory, or rather, I should say, an undiscovered country for me.
Ooh, nice. Yes. Yeah, today we're going to be talking about some of the more recent comics, since we've not really been touching on them recently, so we've got quite the backlog to cover. But first, I want to just tell you how to contact us. Of course, you can find us wherever you listen to your podcasts, and while you're there, leave us a star rating and a written review. That'll help others find the show, and honestly, just be nice to get some feedback every once in a while. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM, Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM. You can also join our Literary Treks group on Goodreads. We keep that updated with the current and upcoming books we're going to talk about. And there's some discussion boards in there, and not super active in there, but it'd be nice to get active in there again. So join up, won't you? And then, of course, you can find us again on Facebook in our private Facebook group called the Babel Conference, and just type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and we should come right up. And lastly, do us a favor and join us on Patreon at patreon.com/TrekFM. That's patreon.com/TrekFM. And you can join at a number of different levels, and you can even support specific shows like Literary Treks and join myself and Greg Rozier as associate producers. So look us up there and be very grateful for your support. Well, Jonathan, in our news segment, the only thing that I wanted to talk about was just to basically remind people of our new book that's coming out next month. Why don't you, it sounds like you might have already gotten your little hands on it. Why don't you tell us what that is?
So we have Pliable Truths by Dayton Ward. I can't reach my copy at the moment, but its release is at the end of May, May 21st, I believe. And it's like a next generation novel, but it's got a lot of DS9 connections as well. So I'm very excited to read that.
Yep. It's always nice getting a new one, and then from our friend Dayton as well. So hopefully Matthew can wake him up off the couch in the green room to have him come on the show.
And one other thing I forgot to mention to you before we started talking was that we did have a bit of a delay. The Strange New Worlds novel Asylum by Una McCormick appears to be delayed from September to November. So it's a slight delay, but it's not terribly long. We've seen longer ones before.
We've seen longer. Yes, well, and that seems to happen from time to time, but it's good to know it's still coming, because we always like Una's books and Strange New Worlds. We don't have very many of those yet, so that'll be cool. All right, well, why don't we get our animation on and head over into the comics?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, well, like we said, we haven't been doing the comics recently. We've had so many, we've actually had some new books that we've, you know, been interviewing authors. We've had other books come up and just haven't had a chance to really kind of dive back into the comics. And and some of our listeners are probably huge comic book fans. So today there's no book. There's just the comics. So we've got like, I don't know, I think it was like 12 comic issues to go through across like five different series. So we're not going to go issue by issue. We'll just kind of talk about them as a whole. And Jonathan, I kind of wanted to just kind of start with you and kind of tell our listeners, you know, we talked a little bit, you know, before we started today, you know, about your history with the comic books. So why don't you tell our listeners kind of where you're at?
Well, this could be a very short history because I don't have a history with the comics. Reading the comics for this is the first time I've ever read Star Trek comics. In my collection, I have a few Star Wars comics, and I mean like a handful, like seven or eight, and that's it. I've never gotten into comics previously, so this is a new medium for me. So I am very much going to be this is my first time experiencing it, and you'll have to be the wise sage guiding the conversation for this one.
Well, yeah, my history before I joined up with this show is pretty short as well, but you know, IDW is never short on comics. It seems like there's a few every month. And yep. So hopefully once we, you know, get back into we'll start kind of doing them a little bit more regularly as we record, but we'll see. So we'll just kind of dive right in. The first series is kind of a mini series that we'll talk about is Picard's Academy, which is it basically, I don't really know how to describe it, really. It's kind of an alternate take almost on Jean-Luc Picard's time at Starfleet Academy. And it's, you know, Matthew and I had talked before several months ago, I guess, when we talked about the first couple issues, that it definitely seems to be a departure for what we see for Picard himself, and especially when we're using somewhat of the kind of logo, I guess, of Star Trek Picard, the series. But the tone of the comic is very different from anything you'd expect to see from Jean-Luc Picard. And I guess as a brief overview of the series, of the miniseries, it's Picard, and he's basically trying to be top of his class. We see lots of characters like Boothby, Spock even shows up, even though I think in the show on the episode Sarek, I think he even mentions, or maybe it was Unification, but he mentions he'd only met Spock like once at Spock's wedding. But in this comic, Spock is one of his advisors, and you know, get Professor Galen, but you know, the bulk of his time is spent competing with his classmates, and there's some more adult humor, I guess, if you could call it that, in this series too. But, you know, it kind of ends with essentially like kind of a Kobayashi Maru type scenario for him, which to me was probably the best part of this little mini series, just because it was more true to form for him and learning how to be a leader. But that's kind of in a nutshell. What were your thoughts on this one, Jonathan?
Well, when I first picked it up, I thought it was most interesting that the art style is completely different from all the others that we're following. You know, we have the Sons of Star Trek, we have the Defiant series, the regular Star Trek series, and then we have the Strange New Worlds series. And all four of those have a very similar style. The coloration of the comics all seemed very similar, the brush strokes, everything. This one, it was almost entirely bright colors involved. The characters seemed much more cartoonish, less traditionally drawn. Whereas the other ones, they seem like they're trying to get a realistic image of the characters, but in comics form. Whereas this, it felt like it was very stylized. So it naturally just felt different because of the design of the comics. And then as I was reading it, you know, you talked, there's some adult humor in there. But the way that they had the banter as like the Academy, it almost felt like this could have been designed for a kid's line, even though it had that adult humor. And I just wonder if it had been written specifically for kids instead, how that might have worked. And maybe the differences of like it's the continuity wouldn't have mattered as much. I don't know. I think when we were talking when we were talking with Matt last, he was saying something about the way you view comics is going to be very differently than the way you view novels. And so I had to keep that hat on. I was like, okay, don't stress over the continuity stuff, because I will run myself crazy if I try to do that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things about the comics that's kind of nice is they can, well, if you like that sort of thing, I guess, is they can kind of stretch from what we could see on TV for mm-hmm. sure, but also from what you might get in novels. And this, yeah, kind of does remind me like of some of the, they're probably almost more middle grade or even younger mm-hmm. books, like the Starfleet Academy books yep. way back when, Pocket put out forever ago. And this could have almost fit, like if they'd done like a couple, like they're doing with the Star Trek Prodigy books now, like if they'd have done right, a couple yeah. like that, this might have worked a little bit better for me. But yeah, it seemed like they were trying to do a little bit of Lower Decks and
yes, that, you know, is exactly, with Picard. That is exactly it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it, I don't know, it just, for me, it might work for some people. Yeah. For me, it just, as a little mini series, it didn't really add anything for me. It wasn't a hard read for sure. I mean, like there was very little in the way of, you know, some comics can be very dialogue heavy just because that's, you know, kind of what you have to do besides the artwork. And this one was not much of that, which just made him pretty easy to fly through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, our next one that we've got that we're going to talk about is, I think it's the end of the, it was the end of the Star Trek Strange New Worlds, the Scorpius run.
Yeah.
Miniseries. So this was a pretty interesting one. Matthew and I have been pretty mixed, I think, on our thoughts of this one. You know, the basic story is that the Enterprise kind of gets stuck in this region of space, and there's this kind of like godlike being that is taking various races and making them race to get mm-hmm. out of it, and even swapping crew members and everything. So, you know, we kind of yeah. conclude this one with a bang. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on what you read of this one?
First of all, I really liked the artwork on this one. I thought that the artwork worked. Whenever you see the ship in space, I thought those panels looked really good, and then the crew members really looked accurate to the Strange New Worlds TV show, which is also pretty good. The whole floating head god thing I thought was really interesting. And I, of course, I'm only jumping in at the end here in the last issues, like 4 and 5. So I was like, hey, I want to find out more about this floating head thing. My mind went to, Final Frontier, mm-hmm. with that floating head character. I liked the elements of the race with Spock being on the other ship and them thinking that he's, you know, abandoned them. And then he really was working, trying to help the Enterprise the whole time. The one thing that I assume we're going into spoilers on these.
Yep. We can. Yeah. We'll tell our readers now or listeners now we're going spoilers on all of them.
Okay. So the one thing that just like at the end of issue 4, when literally the Enterprise is like broken up into a bunch of pieces. And then at the beginning of issue 5, it's like, yep, oh, it's okay. We're just going to stitch it together. One big ship. You'll take. And then he's like, all right, how long do you need? I need 12 hours. I need two. Actually, you have 2 hours. All right, I'll make that work. It's like the ship is in pieces. How can you fix it in 2 hours? Like, at least have the decency to say it's going to take me a couple of days and then do like the SpongeBob 3 days later. Like, at least do that. Yeah. Don't put the time crunch on it. But it's like, I do not believe that you could, even with your crew working as hard as they can put the ship physically back together in like 2 hours time. Like, that was just, and I know that they had the help of the other ship that was out there, and they had Spock, where I was just like, that was just an odd choice. That being said, artwork on that, so those panels of the ship coming back together were gorgeous.
Yeah, I agree. The artwork in these ones, these Strange New Worlds ones, and even the previous Strange New Worlds ones that we've had have been really good. I do like when the characters look like themselves. We've had some issues where, well, I mean, there's Picard, but even when the artwork is similar, but you can't tell who the character is, it makes it kind of hard to follow sometimes. But yeah, this one, all of the space shots were great. And yeah, with with the ship breaking apart like it did, and then kind of, I mean, it was almost magic how it came back together.
Right.
I mean, you know, like they didn't even hardly, they techno babbled it a little bit, but you know, and that's one of the things I guess you can do in comic books that you're not going to really see on a show where all of a sudden the ship is just, I mean, it, you will from week to week, you know, like never see the damage, but yeah,
this one, with Pike, his face never really registers panic. And maybe that's because he's trying to pretend not to be panicked, but it's like your ship broke apart. There are people just floating out there. Like, you should, there should be a little bit more tell on your face.
Yeah, he's very stoic, that's for sure.
Yep.
But yeah. And Pelia was pretty good too. She looked very stern in her artwork too. But you know, this is a miniseries that I kind of felt like grew on me. And I think I would almost consider going back and reading the earlier issues just to kind of remind myself, because it was definitely weird in the first few issues, like kind of trying hard to follow and trying to figure out like what's the threat. I mean, obviously the threat of destruction and only one ship is going to survive this thing or whatever. But this is one that really kind of came together at the end, I feel like, and made it worth reading. And it was just kind of a fun one to get through that, you know, doesn't really have any bearing on the show. Like, there's not going to be any issues kind of trying to, like, reconcile this, because it's just an adventure that they had at some point. And that's what we want from our comics and books that we read.
That being said, with tie-in fiction, I'd always love to get the, oh, yeah, that time we did, can you fix the ship? I can try, but you know, we did that fix back on the time we did the Scorpion run. You know, they don't even have to go into details. Just by saying that, you automatically know, oh, they're referencing the thing I read. But to give props on something, the scene where the ship comes out of the whatever, wormhole or whatever it was, and they say, well, you said only one ship could win, so we decided to combine our ships and make one big ship. I thought, that is a very Star Trek thing to do. That is like, that would be the big twist at the end of an episode. So bravo on that. I appreciated that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it seems like the authors of this really kind of understood the assignment.
Yes, they did.
Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, and that's, you know, the end of the Scorpius run. And so hopefully, you know, I'm sure we'll get more Strange New Worlds comics. And the one before, the miniseries that was before this was, I think it was called The Illyrian Enigma. And it kind of revolved around kind of some of Number One's past and them trying to get her back. And it was like between seasons one and two. And then it kind of ended on a cliffhanger. And then the show went in a completely different direction. It was kind of almost too bad, because it wasn't like, I don't know if you ever in the new the kind of Kelvinverse Star Trek movies, there were some comic books that led up to each of those movies, or at least up to the first two. Like, there was Countdown, and then there was Countdown to Darkness. I think
I've heard of them. I haven't read them.
Yeah, I think it was in Countdown to Darkness, if I remember, that they made a comment in the movie about like, oh, we'll just use this ship that we have from the Mud incident. And that was something that was referring back to the comic that was one of the lead ups. And I mean, it was like co-written or like the story by the people who wrote the movie too. But that was kind of one of those situations that was nice, that if you're watching the movie and never read the comics, you're not really going to miss anything. But if you've read the comics, you kind of feel a little bit good about having, you know, done your homework beforehand.
And from a tie-in perspective, there's like levels of how excited I get when that happens. If the movie makes a reference and then the comic is or novel is written afterwards to tie in, it's like, okay, that's like they're just doing the tie-in. And then if it's the same writer and they're just connecting to their work, I'm like, well, of course you're going to reference it because you wrote it. But then there's the level where occasionally something happens where the movie or show references a pre-existing work that was already either in the pipeline or had already been written. And then the movie was written and released afterwards. And that always, to me, is the coolest, because that's an example of they didn't have to include it and they, under normal circumstances, wouldn't. But that writer has chosen to put the emphasis on tying things in, which is one reason, you know, for, to borrow from another franchise, for Solo, I really liked it because they made a ton of references in Solo to other things that really, you know, made the fandom really happy, and because they were able to connect to like the Lando Calrissian books and the Han Solo books. And so anytime if Star Trek is able to do that, I always would welcome it.
Yeah. Well, and they've done that a little bit, you know, with the, like, Una's name, even, you know, number one's right, name that came out of the books.
Yeah.
And then there was something else that on one of the newer shows that was, or Nyota, Uhura, like Nyota came from the books as well. And then the first time we saw that name or heard that name was, I think, in the Kelvin movies. And now that's just kind of her first name. And that originated from the books as well. So the books do good at naming characters. In fact, I think David Mack, actually, if I remember correctly, he, when he was charged with writing the first Discovery novel, he was kind of given some backgrounds of the characters, and they only had, I think, their just their last names. And so he was the one that came up, like, I believe, with Kayla for Kayla Detmer, and I think a couple of the other characters.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think, I'm sure he talked about it on Literary Trek sometime way back when he was on here. But
I have that book. I have that book that I haven't, I just haven't wrote it yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's, you know, it's just, yeah, I agree. It's nice when the tie-in authors can have input that kind of can impact the show. Like you said, it doesn't, and all the authors say they know that's a risk that they take when they're writing tie-in fiction, that it may get kind of usurped by something else. But it's nice when those little nuggets make it in.
Yeah.
Well, our next comic is it appears to be the first of a new miniseries. So you're coming in right on the ground floor here, yes. Jonathan. With
made it for the right one, this one.
Yes. The Sons of Star Trek. And this was one that, you know, even just based on the cover alone, features Q Jr., which even says he can, that people can call him Q Jr., Alexander, Jake, Nog. And I believe just from seeing some of the promo art, we're going to even get some more of the children of Star Trek. So, you know, just given that it's the first issue, you know, we got here, what, you know, what are your initial thoughts, and are you excited to keep going with it?
Oh yeah. I really liked the conversations that were in this one. I really liked specifically the conversations that we got between Jake and Benjamin Sisko when they're in, you know, their quarters, and they're talking about him being a journalist versus him being in Starfleet. And I really liked that because it felt like the novels that we got back in the early 2000s that were the Deep Space Nine books, the Mission Gamma books, and the Avatar books. Those the conversations that were had in this felt similar tonally. They weren't the same conversations, but they were similar. And I liked that because it felt very true to the characters. And then Q Jr. is one of those characters that a lot of people don't like him. I find him really humorous and fascinating. And I was really happy when Kirsten brought him into her books, her Voyager books. And so I had a smile on my face when he showed up here.
Yeah, he's I feel like I've got a love-hate relationship because he's, especially because he was played by John DeLancey's son in real, you know, his real life son.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. It's like, I think his name is Keegan DeLancey, something like that. But
that's,
you know,
so
he's got such a, yeah, he's got such a different way of playing the character, but it's similar enough that you kind of just get that kind of trickster vibe from him, kind of that, you know, that foil that, you know, Picard and Janeway had to face. But yeah, it's I think it was a really good choice actually to bring Q Jr. in, especially for like the Sons of Star Trek, but also just to really kick off this adventure that they're going to have where, you know, he kind of sweeps Jake and Nog away to, and Alexander, to an adventure, and kind of, you know, they keep having to replay the same thing over and over again until they get it right. But, oh, that's right. And I keep forgetting too that, Mariner shows up, Mariner from, Lower Decks, which was interesting to see kind of her, a more realistic face, you know, like her own face. But, yeah, this one, I mean, it's just kicking off, so we haven't gotten, you know, very far yet. It's obviously kind of an alternate reality type of situation. But yeah, I'm really interested to see where they take this, who else they bring into it, and just kind of, you know, what happens, you know, with these characters. And, you know, because these are ones like, you know, we love Nog, you know, Jake is another one I just feel like was so underutilized in Deep Space Nine. A lot of, and I might get hate for this, but I feel like a lot of his writing, especially early on, wasn't very great. You know, like he didn't have a lot to work with, but, you know, Nog is always fun. And Alexander is kind of another one that's like, meh, I could take him or leave him. But, you know, I think this will be a fun one to get on, you know, over the next few months and read.
The curious thing I'm seeing with this is, how are they going to handle Alexander? Because Alexander has had completely different versions between what we saw from him in TNG and DS9, and then what we've seen in the books, and then what we see here. And he seems less likable here from what we got. But at least from my memory, when I read about him in the post Nemesis books, I'm thinking the he was in the A Time Two books a little bit, and he was in, I think he was in Prey, if I'm remembering that, because I think in those books he becomes an ambassador, and he really grew on me as a character there. And he seemed to figure everything out with his father and really become really respectable. And here he doesn't seem to have that. So I'm curious if they're going to try to build that here, or if they're wanting to go totally different direction.
Yeah, for sure. Alexander's one of those characters that definitely they clearly didn't know what to do with, like, ever, because every time we see him, he's different. Like, when we saw him in Deep Space Nine, he seems more like the character from Deep Space Nine here. I mean, obviously, how he looks, but even some ways, kind of how he's acting. But yeah, I agree. Like, he's one that they could definitely grow a lot throughout this, just because, I mean, this all takes place kind of in the same timeline, if you will, like as kind of the ongoing Star Trek comics, with Sisko on the Theseus. But you know, I liked Jake in the books that we've gotten, and Alexander, I haven't gotten to Prey yet, but I know, yeah, he was, I think he was in Time Two, and I think he was in Articles of the Federation or something like that, because he was
in that era.
Yeah, because I think he was working with Worf while Worf was an ambassador, and I think that's where they kind of set up that maybe Alexander could follow in his footsteps.
Yeah,
kind of setting that up. But yeah, they could either they could either make Alexander great here, or they could really ruin the character for people. So we'll see what happens.
I wonder if this is just a natural thing with Star Trek, that first of all, most of the characters don't have families because of the types of storytelling they tell, but the ones who do, it's just so hard to write the children and age them up. Because I'm going through my mind with all the kid characters that we see grow up, I don't know any that were like super successful. Like the one I would say that was is Jack Crusher. And we only see him as an adult in Picard season three. Like all the other characters, like Riker between the books, his family, his children in the books, and then his children in the show, like they didn't stand out or really seem to work particularly well. Moral in the books, they never really got to do anything with her. And in the show, she's like that one episode in the alternate future of Voyager. So yeah, that's just something that Star Trek has not been able to capture yet. And I wonder if this comic series will help to do that, or if this is just further evidence that it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we have like Molly O'Brien, who was another one that was just kind of there from time to time. Yeah. And there was one episode, I think, that focused on her kind of having, like an older version of her comes back. But, yeah, like, I was just thinking of another one. I mean, there's like Samantha Wildman and, you know, some kind of ancillary characters like that that gets some time. I mean, obviously Wesley Crusher as well. Like he's
and I really liked
quite the arcs.
And I really liked Icheb in the show, in Voyager. And then once he got to the books, I just thought he was okay. Like there were some good moments with him, some like stuff I just didn't like where they took his character. And then in the Picard, I think they fumbled him in the first season. But so like even Icheb's, I think Icheb would be one of the better examples, and he's only mixed at best.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Icheb is one that I'd like to see more of. But even like in the Coda trilogy of books, they actually, or it might have been the lead up to Coda, or might have been right in Coda. But anyways, they aged up Picard and Beverly's son.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Kind of artificially, like, did something. And the authors were saying they kind of did that just because, kind of what you're saying, like, what do you do with a kid in these, like treacherous situations and everything, and to kind of age the kid up to be able to understand more of what's going on and do something a little bit more.
I'm just thinking now, if only they had known where they were taking Picard season 3 when they were writing the Coda trilogy. Can you imagine if they had aged up his son and he had closely resembled Jack from season 3, and it ended up being like, no matter what happened, Picard and Beverly's son was going to end up this way. Like, that would have just been a fascinating way for them to do that. But of course, they wrote the Coda trilogy before season 3 of Picard was written. So they didn't even know that character was coming.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool. Cause had they known where they were going, they could have like tried to tie some things in a little bit, you know, even kind of pull some Easter eggs of stuff that maybe when you're reading the books, you wouldn't even know was something coming from the show.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's move on then to the ongoing, just one that's just called Star Trek. We actually had quite a few of these ones. And I know after we were, talked, you know, in the previous episode, like after we stopped recording that one, we all kind of chatted a little bit about the comics. Since you've, you know, mentioned that this is your first time reading the comics and you're kind of coming into the middle of them, you know, what's interesting about the Star Trek continuing series, I guess, for me, is that it's actually kind of made up of a bunch of kind of mini arcs. And I think in the ones that we read for this time, we actually kind of hit the end of one and kind of transitioned into the next one. And so there's a lot of continuity between them. But just to kind of, I guess, remind our listeners of what's going on, and maybe to help you out a little bit too, as you know, Sisko's come back from his time with the prophets and is given a ship called the Theseus from Starfleet, and gets to basically build his own crew from all the existing characters in Star Trek, plus a few new ones. And in the first kind of however many, like it probably would have been like 6 or 8 issues, we had the kind of the Day of Blood, and like it was just them coming together. But then like Day of Blood, where they're basically kind of fighting gods or something like that. And then like with Day of Blood, it was really more about the Emperor Kalos and him trying to kind of take over everything. And during all that is when we got the split off for Star Trek Defiant, because we had like on Sisko's crew, he had Worf and B'Elanna and Tom Paris, and Lore was even around for a while. Like they brought him up from Daystrom, and Spock and Scotty and Dr. Crusher, and you know, so all of these people from all over the place. And you know, once Defiant split off, like they kind of took their turns in the Day of Blood series as well. But then, you know, they're kind of off on their own secret ops thing. And in this Star Trek ongoing series, we've got I guess basically where we pick it up is Glass and Bone. And so they're working with the Sankethi to and I can't remember which what the other race was, but the Romulans, that's right, the Romulans. Yep. And the Sankethi. So it was kind of interesting. This is kind of we get a little bit, did we have the Sankethi in the books in the Typhon Pact?
Yes, the Zenkethi are in the books there, and they're also in the Vanguard books as well.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. So
I really liked this. I don't know if it was you or it was Matt that described this one as Star Trek Avengers. As soon as that was described to me, it like clicked, and I was like, okay, I understand what they're going for here. This I'll just say this is my favorite of the series that we followed. I liked the action, I liked the art style. There were some cool twists in this one. It was mostly cool because this is the idea of you get to see these characters interact with each other. Like seeing Tom and Sisko interacting is really cool. Mm-hmm. And then we see Beverly Crusher interact with Scotty when they're going down in the mines in this one. I thought that was I had fun with their banter. The writer of this comic gets the dialogue of like Scotty and how to make his specific to him and how to make Crusher specific to her. And so the characters are really interesting to follow when they have that. And then of course the whole plot line of the fighting on the planet with the, no matter what they're trying to do to convince them to, you know, we've come to a settlement, and then the Romulans manipulating things. I thought all of that was really interesting. My favorite part, because I didn't have the context of the previous issues. And so, and maybe this is a total surprise to you in this issue as well. But to me, I was blown away when, I believe was it the Cardassians show up, and is it Gul Dukat? That's the one that shows up.
No, or is it Garak? It's Damar. It's Damar. It's that's right, Damar's son, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So when he shows up and he and Picard, not Picard, Sisko have a standoff, and they're basically like communicating, and they're like making threats. If you cross this line and if you do this thing, we're going to have to retaliate. And then they're like, all right, the channel's off. All right, we got the secure channel now. And they're like, all right, great, they bought it. And I was like, oh, they're working together? This is part of the plan. He's like, all right, Picard. Sisko, I keep saying Picard. Sisko, I don't want to fight you. But I will if you make me. So we need to figure out a way. I just loved that kind of subterfuge that it was like the people want them to fight. They don't want to fight, but they may have to. And I just thought that was such a cool twist. Did you know that they had that connection previously?
You know, it's been so long since I've read the previous issues. Like, so I knew when Damar showed up, at first I was like, wait, but Damar died. And then I remembered, oh, right, it's his son that kind of took over. And I think that there was some... not really animosity, but kind of some adversity, I guess, between Sisko and Damar Jr. And so when I read this part, like, you know, part of me was just, yeah, like I was a bit surprised by it because I was just thinking, oh man, like, yeah, like now we've got the Romulans and the Zenkethi, but now the Cardassians are coming. Like, what is going on? And then, like, yeah, they had their kind of extra communication that wasn't being monitored, you know, on the side, which was, you know, I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, you know, they are working together. And yeah, I agree. That was a nice little twist they had there.
The irony of this series is if it's going to be the Avengers of Star Trek teaming up, all our heroes teaming up. Well, if you're going to do that, you have to have an awesome threat. And that means all our villains are teaming up. Like, the only thing this series needs is the Borg. And they're just, you know, it's full enemy versus full good guys type thing. Because you have the Cardassians involved, the Romulans, the Zenkethi, the other creatures from that planet. So, and then I'm trying to, because I read this like a month ago. Is the, Kim? Is Kim in this comic? Is he Section 31? Am I remembering that correct? He was in some.
He's basically like in kind of a black ops, but black I don't think it's ever said that he may as well be in Section 31. I can't recall if they ever say that that's what he is because his name is Kingslayer, I think, isn't it, or something like that? It's very Game of Thrones-y.
I just thought it was interesting because he's the type of character who might get bitter over time and not be – because he's the one character who had the most optimism in Voyager, and he's the one whose optimism – like he just keeps getting, you know, trampled on. He never gets promoted. He never gets his flirtation with Seven to go anywhere. He always feels trampled upon, and so he might be the one person that if – Section 31 or Starfleet Black Ops or whatever, whoever it is that's recruited him to to join them, he's gone through so much that he's probably one that's like, well, finally I can make a difference. Someone's noticed my talent. Someone's noticed my value. And so like, I was like, yeah, it makes sense that he would do that. It's heartbreaking because he's such a good character. He's such a good guy wanting to do the right thing to see him join this Black Ops group. But it makes sense character-wise.
I agree. Like, I'm very interested with where they took the character and if they're going to continue using him as we go forward, because he kind of pairs up here with Lily Sato, who's the Andorian ancestor, not ancestor, descendant of Hoshi Sato from Star Trek Enterprise, which I thought was kind of an interesting connection to Enterprise that they were able to make. And, you know, even the Admiral Sato, who's Lily's father, is in here too. But having her and Harry paired up, just because she's an ensign and she's kind of trying to find her place in the world and how she fits in, and he's kind of almost takes her under his wing, I mean, to his Black Ops stuff that he needs to do. But, you know, she's a character that we've had some of, you know, throughout the series so far. I think we're up to issue like 17 or 18 now. And so, like, you know, she's been there the whole time, but I'm actually kind of, and she's an original character. I'm very interested to see where we take her from here. Just because I think, especially if Harry sticks around, that could be an interesting pairing.
I also thought it was interesting when Sisko gets injured, he wakes up and the first thing he's like is, all right, put me back in. And they're like, this isn't just Star Trek. This is just general writing. If you have your character who's like an alpha, who's like awesome, it's like, I'll be fine. I don't need all the recovery time. And they're like, but you'll die if you don't get a recovery time. And he's like, then I'll die. And he goes right back into it. And you're like, could someone else, you know, like, help him out? Like, it seems like he's taken on too much for himself here.
Yeah, he's like, get my uniform.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah. And it kind of seems like Sisko, I suppose, but yes. And what's funny is actually with that issue, I started reading that issue where he's waking up after having been stabbed, and it was also right after Lily had gotten one of her antenna cut off, and I'm like, man, it's been so long since I've read the previous issues. I don't remember any of this. Yep. And realized I read these, like, I skipped an issue. And so I like read them out of order. I kind of Quentin Tarantino'd it. And,
you know, I can do better. I can one up that, for Defiant. When I opened the Defiant comics, I read all these on my phone cause I couldn't figure out how to get them on my computer. And when I opened the Defiant comics, it, was set to the wrong setting. And so it opened it by file size and not by file name. So it didn't just scramble which comics I got, like issue this, issue that. It scrambled the panels I got, or the pages of each one when I started reading Defiant. And so as I'm reading the Defiant one, there's this thing on the bridge, and then I jump to this thing in the arena, and then I jump to the bridge in the arena, and I'm like, what on earth is happening? And it took me a little while to figure out, oh, I need to resort it. And I read it in order, and I was like, okay, at least I can get the general beats of this, but I still don't get it. So that, do not recommend doing that. Try to find a way on your computer, not on a phone.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah, I downloaded I have an app. I don't even know what it's called. It's just called Comic Books. I don't even know where it came from. Something free that I load them all into.
I should do that next.
That would be crazy. Well, yeah, I think, you know, as far as the Star Trek series goes, you know, we ended with kind of a cliffhanger. I think it's going into the next little miniseries, and T'Lir comes back, which you wouldn't have met them before, but they're like a Vulcan... who, and I can't remember exactly when they left, but like basically comes back here as a kind of either as a new threat or just somebody very powerful. So be interested to see where that all goes. Cause we really haven't gotten much from T'Lir in the series so far, I feel like. So something interesting to look forward to in the next little arc of Star Trek.
If any of these, I was going to go back and reread the previous arcs, this is the one that I'm most interested in. because it was the one that hooked me the easiest. And you saying that they have different arcs makes me think, ooh, like I've gotten this story, which I really enjoyed. Maybe there's others that I can jump in with. So I'm hoping to find those.
Yeah, definitely. They're definitely worth taking a look at. And honestly, you know, like, so we, you know, as we move into Star Trek Defiant, it is a spinoff and it's very similar in vein to Star Trek. But the difference with Star Trek Defiant is that the crew in this one definitely are black ops. I mean, they're all but disavowed by Starfleet. I mean, they're kind of following Starfleet orders, but, you know, kind of the typical Mission Impossible or, you know,
yes,
MI5 or MI6 or whatever you want to call it. You know, like, you know, if you're caught, we're going to totally disavow you. I mean,
I know, but I don't think that panel is in there. Panel was in there that they said, if you or any of your crew members are caught, Starfleet will not be rescuing you or something like that. And I was like, you totally just took that from Mission Impossible.
Yeah, exactly.
Another Paramount property, though.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, maybe we'll see a crossover. Ethan Hunt joins the Defiant crew. Oh, man. But yeah, like this one, especially in this kind of grouping that we got, which starts with issue, it looks like we went from issue 10 through, what, 12, 13?
Yeah, plus the
annual that was in there. You know, we actually start seeing a more just kind of animosity between the crew and really against Worf, who's kind of following orders from Starfleet. But then, you know, the crew kind of, you know, we've got Ro and B'Elanna, and I think Spock is in this series. And you know, these during this period, they're actually trying to capture Hugh. Who we also got in Star Trek Picard, Berlingoff Rasmussen from I can't remember which episode of Next Generation that was, but the guy who said he's from the future but was really from the past and was stealing technology, and then an Iotian whose name Benny the Munch, I think was his name.
That makes so much. That's an Iotian now. Okay.
Yeah,
I was wondering why they were looking like the gangsters in those panels, and I was like,
okay. And I think at one point they even said too that like this was, I think it was on the same planet, like Iotia 2 or whatever it was, but that this particular group of people, where Benny the Munch comes from, really just stuck in that Chicago mafia kind of place. Whereas the rest of the Iotians kind of started technologically advancing and, you know, kind of changing. But they even described, too, that the Iotians are very susceptible to kind of suggestions on how to, you know, formulate their society and stuff, which I thought was kind of an interesting way to advance those characters that we haven't seen since, you know, the original series. And, I mean, we've seen them in books and stuff, but... You know, I thought that was fun, but, you know, we're seeing a lot of contention amongst the crew now. And I think in this one, we also kind of have crossed over, ended one little mini series and working our way into the next one. But, you know, the Defiant series to me seems like they're trying to say like, okay, what couldn't we do on a regular Starfleet ship? But with our Starfleet characters who've got like kind of the discipline, but also, you know, with B'Elanna and Ro, who were both Maquis at some point, you know, some questionable morality in some ways. And Lore was part of this, you know, in the early issues of Defiant. But it's, I don't know, where does this, you know, I know you said the Star Trek one was your favorite, but kind of knowing this year happening in parallel with the Star Trek one, you know, what do you think of Defiant?
Well, even if you hadn't told me that they were like spinoffs, I would have gotten it just by the art style and just by the way it was handling the characters. Because like it felt like they were two different things. If the one is like the Avengers, the regular Star Trek one, this is like the what's the name of that movie that's coming out from Marvel? It's got like all the B characters who are like the misfits.
Is that the Secret Wars or something like that?
Not the Secret Wars. No, I'm blanking on it. I had a really good analogy and I lost it. But it's the group with like Bucky and you know, the knockoff Black Widow, and like all of them, and knockoff Captain America and Thunderbolts. That's it. I got it. Thunderbolts.
Oh, Thunderbolts. This
is
yes.
Defiant felt like the Thunderbolts as the Star Trek line is to Avengers, because everything here was a lot more serious. Everything was a lot more, you know, these are not the lightest of characters. Like Spock is an outlier in this group.
Mm-hmm.
In this group.
For sure.
I thought the panels looked nice. But this was the one that was, you know, because of jumping in the middle, I did not know the context of how it was connected necessarily. And so a lot of it was very confusing to me when I was reading it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could definitely see that. It's a unique one for sure. And I'm pretty interested to see where it's going, since we're bringing back the parasites from the Next Generation episode Conspiracy, and just kind of seeing what they do there. I think in the novels they kind of connected them to the Trill somehow, like in the Deep Space Nine books, if I remember correctly. And it was kind of one of those species that I like. Had they not done that in the novels, they would have been a good one to bring back for Coda. But
yeah,
you know, this will be kind of a new take on those aliens. Just be interesting to see what they do with them. But yeah, this one, I love your analogy to the Thunderbolts, because it does kind of feel like, yeah, these are in some ways kind of side characters. You know, and it is interesting to see them kind of doing some non-Starfleety kind of things, but
yeah,
with the Dissension and the crew now, it'll be interesting to see where they take it from here. Well, I mean, as we're, you know, kind of wrapping up our discussion today on the comics, you have any final thoughts on these, like any that you're really looking forward to? I mean, you've talked about maybe trying to go back and read some of the old ones, but you know, what are your thoughts as we move forward and try to start doing this more regularly?
The Strange New Worlds one, I think, will be really interesting to follow, especially since we're just about to start a new line for that. That seems very interesting. The regular Star Trek one, and then of course the Sons of Star Trek. Sons of Star Trek was really an interesting concept. It was just a single issue that we had, and so I was getting all ready for it. It's over, and I went to the. I was like, maybe there's other files. Maybe I'm just reading it wrong. So I looked through all the other files, and I was like, it's not there. So that one, once we have like you know a couple of issues to read all at once, I'm used to reading. You know, as I mentioned, the very few comics I've read, I read in like the 5 or 6 issue bind ups. And so it almost feels like I'm getting a complete story in just that one bind up. And so this was very interesting having like reading one issue by itself and then maybe having the next issue, maybe not, which is a very different reading experience.
Yeah. Yeah. We've, you know, talked about that before. Like whenever we get a first issue of something, it's really hard to kind of even rate it or anything, just because it's like we just got an introduction here. We don't even know mm-hmm. where it's going. And, you know, sometimes if they don't start off very strong, it can kind of set a bad tone for the whole kind of mini series. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, Sons of Star Trek, I feel like was one of the stronger starts of a new mini series that we've seen in quite a while. Some of the ones that Matthew and I talked about probably about a year ago, as like the mirror wars or some of those mirror universe ones that they've had in the past. Like the first couple issues were just like, what are we even reading? Like, what is happening? So I'm glad we're not running into that here.
Well, I'm excited to go into our next novel that we'll read, this time into a new release, our second new release of the year. This one's going to be the novel we kind of teased at the beginning of the episode. That's Pliable Truths from Dayton Ward. So we'll be talking about that book next month. I don't know if we're going to be able to get him on the show, but I think we'll get him out of the green room.
Yeah. I think, Matthew, now that Matthew's kind of hanging out in the green room a lot too, he'll probably be able to, pull him in here for this one. I hope so. He's always a pleasure to have on. And frequent guest. So, and I'm looking forward to that every time we get a new one. It's nice. So that'll be great. But in the meantime, Jonathan, you know, where can people find you when you don't have your nose stuck in the comic books?
You can find my YouTube channel, Jonathan Cohn, where I talk about all things books, prose books specifically. You can also find my Twitter at Jonathan Cohn. If you want my non-book stuff, like any movie or TV talk stuff, that's where I do that. There, I think of my Goodreads is just my name, Jonathan Cohn. So I'm very consistent across the board.
Yes, you are. Yeah, and you can find me on Goodreads, Letterboxd, Twitter, and Instagram at Knitting Trekkie. And I'm also a frequent lurker in the Babel Conference on Facebook as well. So be sure to get in there and, you know, have a conversation with us. We'd like that. But thank you so much for listening. And until next time, live long
and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.